Appreciate everyone praying for my health over the last few days. I don't know if you could notice, but on Sunday I was not feeling so well. And then between a large amount of caffeine and cough syrup, we made it through. And we're still waiting for some of that to leave the system, but feeling a lot better today. I don't know why I had to be last in the whole church to catch a cold, but hey, I'll take it last, I'll take it first, I don't care. All right, Ruth chapter 3, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man, until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down, and thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. Now to understand truly the last two chapters of this book, we have to get the whole story and what its nature is. I know what I'm supposed to do with this. I know I'm supposed to say, kinsman redeemer. Boaz is Jesus, where Ruth, every head bowed, every eyes closed, is Jesus your Boaz tonight? And then we go home, and I humbly request that we get more help for the ladies in cleaning the bathrooms, and then we leave. But we have to get the whole story. It is a wonderful idea, the kinsman redeemer. I love that teaching, and I do not deny it, and I would never question it, and I would never belittle it, but there is so much more to this. We have to understand what kind of story we're looking at. Although there are many allegorical elements, this is not a story of allegory where once upon a time there was a maiden fair and her heart was broken and her mother-in-law's heart was broken and they had to move and they lost all their stuff and here's this grand metaphysical lesson to learn from it. There is. I mean, there's a great, great type of Christ here. There is. But we cannot deny the whole story. It's not just allegorical. There are allegorical elements, but it's not all allegorical. This is not a cute love story. I mean, wouldn't you just wish that that's what Ruth was? Just a cute fairy tale, like a Disney princess story? Right? Where she goes through all these things and there's this prince that sees her out in the field and he gives her these things and she looks over and they fall in love and everything is wonderful. And then there might be some minor setbacks like a fun little rom-com, right? Well, there's this whole thing over the land that my husband owned or my father-in-law owned and we got to deal with that and everything falls apart. And then one crazy night when everyone's at the harvest festival, they fall in love. And they have the great wedding. There's no wedding in this story. There's no talking birds. There's no mice that make dresses. And though it has all the key elements for a lifetime story, right? Death, multiple husbands, sorrow, crying, and finally you fall in love with a guy you barely know. It has all the key groupings that you want in that story. It's not a love story either. It's not a rom-com. It isn't parabolic, though there's good things to learn from it. It is a real event. What this is history. And I heard a preacher say one time that if we don't just look at the idea of the kinsman redeemer, there's very little purpose for the story being here. And I go, you're missing it. This is history. When little David sat down and wanted to hear about the family tree, this story would come up. And as a matter of fact, it also is a fantastic example of what God can do in our lives when we think everything has fallen apart and the story is over. As a matter of fact, I've known a lot of Christians that believe that they can have such terrifying heartache one day, and that's it. The rest of their lives are a footnote in a story that ended when they were in their 20s, 30s, 50s, 80s, 90s, whatever. My story ended when this tragic event happened, and nothing beyond that mattered. God doesn't write those kind of stories. As a matter of fact, the moment where Naomi said, that's it, my name is Mara, I'm bitter, God has worked this horrible curse on me, there's nothing more that I have to give, that's when the story got good. That's when the blessings really began to happen. You know what? I look at this and I would love for it to just be allegorical. This is a story of Christ. I'd love for it to be parabolic, where we just look at it and think of a lesson. But I would lose the fact that this is history. Very much the same as we would sit around maybe in a coffee shop and talk about one of our favorite historical events. This is a large event in the life of David and in continuation the line of Christ. So not only are there elements of the story of Christ in it, but it is the lineage that leads to him. Wouldn't it be neat if we saw the wedding in there? We love weddings. Don't you love weddings? You love weddings until you got to pay for a wedding. We were talking about Brother Mike, he's building barn doors as a decoration for a wedding. I looked this up. The average wedding dress today costs $1,600. $1,600, that is the average. And you know there are people throwing the average off. You know that they're in the tens of thousands, the 16,000s. You know people really shell out for the dress, and you really only ever wear the dress once. Do you know what the average wedding cost is this year? This year alone, 2020 going to 2021. You know what that was? In Michigan, not California, not New York, not where they got money, here in Michigan. You know what the average cost is? $24,799. It almost gets me to the point to where I've stopped having nightmares about Melody running off and getting married and thinking, you know what, it wouldn't be that bad. If you were to think, okay, what phrase comes to mind when you think of a wedding, it always used to be what? Till death do us part. Now it's we should just elope. And that normally comes when you're sitting down and you're looking over, okay, $350 just to cut the cake. Do we really want that service? Or can we get somebody to do that for us? See, it goes beyond just the love story. We begin the book with hurt, bitterness, and sorrow. Three women completely devastated by loss. Naomi's in a foreign land with little prospects. She's got land that she cannot redeem on her own or work on her own. One of her daughters-in-law leaves at her behest. The other clings to her. Now she's got to figure all this out. All right, now I've got Ruth and she won't go away. So we've got everybody hurt. We've got a family in shambles. Ruth, out of love, bonded herself to Naomi, and that love and promise led her to glean and pick up the rubbish behind the harvesters in a man named Boaz's field. But it's at chapter 3 where the things begin to turn. What seemed at first as Naomi tolerating Ruth, accepting Ruth as, well, I need you, but I told you to go away, to now offering advice to Ruth for her to have a better life. There's this moment in grief or hardship where your heart's kind of shipwreck, where it's chaos and it's numb and it's almost like you're in a catatonic state mentally. It's hard to think. And it's hard to think of anything else or anybody else but you and the immediate problem and the pain. And then there comes the moment where the fog lifts. Now, the pain doesn't go anywhere. The sorrow is still there. You're still fighting the complications and the reality of what's happened. But your mind's a little bit more free. And I think that's where we're catching Naomi here, is that point where she now looks over at Ruth and she goes, Ruth, you're working too hard. And this can't be Ruth's life for my sake. As a matter of fact, now I can process and I can think. Now we can start moving forward. Moving forward is very difficult. As many of you in this room know, some of you far better than I've experienced, you know that the days, I mean, it seems like such a weird phrase to say, it's so cliche and so almost poisonous, but time moves on, doesn't it? tomorrow comes. And you don't want it to come. You want tomorrow to wait for a second for you to catch your breath. And you want tomorrow to stop coming so you can just process for a minute. But sure enough, the next morning comes. And your boss saying, take some time to yourself, has now become 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And you've got to decide how you're going to pay the bills. And you've got to decide whether or not you're going to keep that beard you've been growing. Whether or not you're going to go get your nails done. Whether or not you're going to put some clothes in the washer. You've got to make some decisions about life because life keeps happening even though you want it to stop. For days she sat there and they picked through whatever was left of this barley or corn harvest, however you want to put it. Picking out the maggots and picking out the good pieces and grinding it down for them to make a meager ration of bread and surviving wherever it is they could find shelter. And Naomi goes, all right, I'm ready to participate in this moving forward. And some people, they get caught in this idea that if I move forward, I'm betraying what's left behind. In all actuality, and you know this, you can't grab what's left behind and bring it with you. It left first. You can't do that. She could have sat there all she wanted. Her husband was not going to come through that door. He was not going to say, honey, while you were gone, I went out to the field. I handled all of our business. We had a great heart. That wasn't going to happen. You have to know when to move on. And she's right at the point where she's able to process what needs to happen next. What we see very first in this passage is that love returns. It is the lie of the devil to get you to believe that once love is lost, you can never have it again because it'll never be the same as what it was with the person that you had. That perhaps to even entertain the notion that love goes on after death would be some kind of betrayal or replacement of that person. Now, we have to be careful what we mean by love. Love takes many forms. There's the love between a husband and a wife. There's a love between a parent and a child. A love between two friends. Now, is it possible that, if one day when I go, because I do plan on going first, look at me, that if I go soon enough, Danielle may have to go on without me and she may decide to marry another man? Probably. Or if I do it nice and old like I plan to if the Lord don't come back, maybe it's not another man that she finds, but she finds a good friend along the way. And her friendships enrich it and deepen. She's not replaced me with that friendship. I'm up in heaven. I'm a memory. It's no replacement. It's no betrayal of me to have that happen. What if in the process she gets married? Is that a betrayal to me? No, it's till death do we part. She fulfilled her end of the contract. I got out early. Right? I pulled the escape clause and that was it. She got her freedom and I got whatever happens when you're up in heaven. It's no betrayal. It's hard to think. Now does that necessarily mean, as we see in the Bible, that once somebody is lost in the spousal relationship that one must replace them? No. But love grows back. We don't have to put that love in a box. We don't have to ship it off with their belongings. What we can have, though, is closure to that and more love on top of it. You see, the love between Naomi and Ruth began to grow. She now looked at Ruth and from going, I have nothing to offer you. Now Ruth has something to offer her. I'm going to offer you some advice. And that advice was how to get rest from this lifestyle that they had fallen into. We see now that the bitterness is slowly leaving Naomi, which happens with forgiveness and time. She went from being cared for to finally being able to care for others, which is a wonderful point to be in. It does not mean that she is entirely over the loss of her children or her husband. It simply means that she is back to functioning. Restoration to function is a good thing. When they're able to do things and to care for others again. Not the fake face, the burying ourselves into other people's problems that sometimes manifest with grief, right? Where I'm going to become a busybody. No, she's looking at her situation. She goes, all right, here she, okay, we gotta pump the brakes on this lifestyle. This is going to hurt her. I'm going to die watching her be miserable when the obvious solution is right here. Now the love also grew between Ruth to Boaz. Now I have to again make sure we understand that Ruth had no responsibilities here. She didn't have to do any of this. She could have stayed in her land. She was not a Jew. She didn't have to go by the Jewish custom. She didn't have to go by the Jewish law. And as a matter of fact, during the time of the judges here, very few people relied on Jewish law to get anything done. They weren't even following their own law. But out of love for Ruth, out of love for Naomi, Ruth took a hold of her God, and that being our God, and took a hold of the rules there. But you got to kind of admit, Boaz was flirting kind of heavy. And that's nice. And you know what? Ruth was kind of a catch. I mean, she took responsibility. She was a grown person. She didn't fall apart. She did what she had to do. She was tough. She was a catch at that time. And to Boaz was old. I mean, as we see here, he was getting on in years because, as we would see later on in the next chapter, when he looks down at her, you could have gone with anybody, any of these younger guys who could work their field better, that maybe even had more field. You could have gone to any of them, but you go to me. I think, and there's not a verse here to prove it other than the fact of looking at what she did, I think Ruth was a little sweet on Boaz. As many of the men owned land and everyone was at the harvest party, she could have approached any of them. She could have flirted with the one with the most land or the most handsome of them. And instead, she chose Boaz. Again, that connection between him and Naomi, I'm sure. But we can't ignore the response that she may have had to his kindness. That while she was working to care for Naomi, there was someone there to make life easier for her too. She cared for him, and I'm not at all sure of everything going on with what happens here with the going and the laying down. This was a very customary thing of the time. Personally, I don't think that this is a very good courting tactic today. Would not recommend for a young lady to go into a man while he is sleeping and lay on his feet. As a matter of fact, I've been married for a little over 10 years. I appreciate if she stays off of my feet. But again, this ritual was something very close to their customs. I don't quite understand it. Don't do it today, but there it is. But we see this love for him. And she had to have some kind of love to be so ready to do this and so excited to do this. She was handling the duties. She could have said no. She could have found another man. But instead, she was happy with Boaz. And with this, we also see that Boaz has some love towards Ruth. Chapter 3, verse 10, and he said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman." Again, we see his love and his respect for her, a love that is born out of respect. And as what love is respect. Love is not dominion. Love is not strictly sexual or feelings based. Love is respect. And Boaz had that for Ruth. And in this, through chapter 4, we see Boaz now has a problem. In Jewish custom, in order to marry the woman, you have to have the land. But he didn't have the rights to either. There was another family member closer that had the right to snag up the land. It would take a really long time for us to go into inheritance customs and rules and regulations among the Jewish people. So let's just save that for another time. But as you're looking at that, he didn't have the right to propose to her. He didn't have the right to the land that came along with the family. Somebody else did. There were definite problems here. And again, it having all to do with the inheritance laws of the Israelites. And of course, of those in that area as well. So there are some problems. Many of us, when we fall into hard times or we fall into grief, there are, on top of all of the pain, there's problems. I've often thought that somebody could make a decent living in telling somebody, or maybe not counseling, but what's the word I'm looking for? In advising as a consultant on end-of-life affairs. Somebody passes away, and all of a sudden you've got thousands of decisions to make over thousands of dollars you don't even have. Right? And there's a lot. And then, of course, there's what do I do going forward? How do I handle this business? What do we do here? How do we handle this thing that's always happened before? Now that this person or now that this thing has left us or hasn't happened anymore, how do I move on? Well, as I said before, life continues. And isn't it good that it never continues and you're left entirely alone? I talked to somebody today. I said, well, surely you've got some friends. No, I don't have any friends. No friends. Well, what do you do when you got some rough stuff going on? This person was give or take as to whether or not they had a relationship with God, but they claimed they had no friendships whatsoever outside. How are you going to live that way? Whether you're introverted or not, or you can't make friends easily, you got to address that. Get some friends. Have something going on here. It's no good to be alone. It is one of the, I would say, thousands of benefits of being part of a church is that you don't go through the hard stuff alone. At least you shouldn't. Now, I know there are churches out there that do that. I'm thankful that we're not one of those churches, right? That we're here for each other and that we're willing to put in the time and put in some sweat and to put in some time just talking and sharing the grief. But you don't have to do those things alone. Boaz knew exactly what to do. And I love how when Ruth goes back to Naomi and she says, listen, this is what's going on and this is what Boaz said. Oh, don't worry. He won't rest until this is taken care of. You know what? Among God's people, there's a lot of us that will not rest until those problems are solved. And that's a wonderful thing. Among family that loves each other, there is that desire to fight and to push forward together. And we know that God fights for us, which above all things, we need. We need. It does not matter the size of the problem or the legal complexity of it. We have God as our Father to advise us in how to be good stewards of things. We've got friends and family. We do not have to fight them alone. And in that, not only does love begin to return, but now problems can be remedied. Now again, there's going to be some things that just won't be erased. Not everything comes back the way that it was, but we can continue on. I remember a very devastating time in my wife's and my life. We had just gotten married and I became incredibly sick. And I lost my job. And I can't remember if it was 1 month or 2 months into our marriage, I had to come home and tell my wife I lost my job. On top of all the medical bills and all the scary stuff we had going on. That was very scary. And you know what? I got a phone call here and a phone call there, and I chased down leads. And finally, it was a lady from our church that says, hey, brother, there's not a lot of, it's not glamorous, but we are looking for someone to come do some cleanup over here at McDonald's for the company that owns all these McDonald's I work for. I go, okay. Showed up for the interview, got the job, began scrubbing floors at McDonald's. I was a dog trainer at PetSmart making thousands. I was doing really good. It was a great business. And I loved every inch of it, and it was gone. Now I'm scrubbing floors at McDonald's. And my boss wasn't a good boss. She was a mean boss. She was a nasty boss. She'd be one of those people that sat there and said, all right, I need you to clean this, 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 and this. Do you understand? Yes, I don't think you do. And she'd walk away. She was not a very happy person. She'd often bring her anger and her frustration into work with her, and she would gladly share that with all of us. Well, I tell you what, that was a problem for me, and it was a sore spot in my life, and it was a hurt, and I was bummed about it, and I was upset about it, and I didn't feel good about myself, and there was all this horribleness going on, but I knew what God would want me to do, right? You show up, and if you got to scrub a floor at McDonald's, you scrub that floor to the best of your ability, and I scrubbed that floor to the best of my ability. I asked one of the maintenance guys to show me how to do this or that. They showed me how to do this or that. I got a promotion, so I was able to do more, made a little bit more money. It was still McDonald's, not McDonald's today, but McDonald's then. Everything was going good, and then one day I'm sitting there in this apartment that we could barely afford, and the maintenance guy comes over, and he's working on the sink underneath our bathroom, And he's talking to me. He goes, yeah. He goes, I lost my partner. I go, well, I tell you what does your partner do? And he goes, well, you really wouldn't have to know much. I'll teach you how to do everything. I just need someone to join in on me. I go, okay. And I sat there and I put in the application. He called me over. He said, Matt, these are the conditions. And he wasn't a good boss and he wasn't a nice boss, but I know what God wanted me to do. So you know what? The problems are starting to solve themselves. Now I went from having one job that didn't pay all that well to two jobs that didn't pay all that well. And that was better than one job that didn't pay. You understand? As I did what God wanted me to do, good things happened. And after a while, me and that guy, we weren't getting along all that well. And there was this guy from another property said, hey, Matt, why don't you come to my property? We're just taking over. And it'll be a grand time. And I went out there. And guess what? It was not a grand time. I was there for a week. A guy got shot and killed right there in one of the buildings. And you sit there and you say, oh, what a horrible story. And you turn the page. You got to turn the page. I got to go fix the carpet. You understand? I cut the carpet out, get a carpet company to come in. Carpet company didn't lay it right, so I had to go back out there and pull the carpet back out, and it was just a whole thing. They promised that they would stain block the underneath. They didn't. Horrible. And I love that job because it paid a lot more. And I could go to one job. I love that. And you know what? Not all the problems got solved at once. Not everything worked out the way that I wanted to. It wasn't what I dreamed I would be doing. It wasn't what God even called me to do, right? It wasn't what I expected I would be doing. But I did what God wanted me to do. And after a while, so I got fed up with the job and things weren't going all that well. So I went into the boss and I said, listen, things are not going well. They need to happen like this, 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 and this. And it's driving me crazy. And he goes, you know what? That's awesome. You're in charge now. Now, by the way, if you ever have a contentious person working for you, just put them in charge. It'll straighten them right out. And I worked like a dog, and I fought for money that I never actually ended up getting, and they made promises that they never kept. But I did exactly what God wanted me to do, and it kept me up late at night, and it scared me half to death most days. And I did what I had to do, and I got transferred over to a safer property, a better property for more money, and everything was going good there, and everything was going better there, and finally things didn't go so well, and I was getting frustrated. So I went and I said, you know what? We need to change things. And they said, no. And I said, okay, fine. And as I was walking out of the boss's office, one of the ladies who work at the corporate office came by. She goes, hey, I want to let you know, I keep getting these comments on your work, and we keep getting compliments on your attitude, that you've got great customer service. How would you like to join us in the office? And I said, great. And one job led to another job led to another job. And the very bosses that said, hey, Matt, listen, if you don't compromise on what I've told you to do, and hey, Matt, if you don't start lying just a little bit, hey, Matt, if you don't start cheating a little bit, hey, Matt, if you don't start missing church a little bit, we're going to have to let you go. That very boss that looked me in the eye and said, you'll never be a manager, was fired 6 months before I became a manager. And I tell you what, I was working hard at that, and I was having a good time at that. Then I wasn't having a good time, and the pandemic hit, and everything was scary all over again, and my heart was broken, and I was all busted up, and it didn't seem like there were any churches out there that wanted everything to do with me, and I was frustrated that I was not where I thought God wanted me to be, and it's not where my heart was, and I knew what God wanted me to do, and I was ready to go and do it, but there was nobody calling, nobody wanted to have anything to do with me. Then about a year ago, Home Church gives me a call, his brother Art on the phone. Amen. My good buddy Kevin Humphrey sold me out. I'm going to see him tomorrow, punch him in the arm. I did what I was supposed to do. And I'll just be honest with you. I wasn't, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this. I was shattered when I came here. I thought, I knew God didn't forget about me, but I was getting there, you know? And I thought, well, maybe my job is to sit here at Flat Rock and just be underneath my pastor until the Lord comes back, because it's getting worse and worse, and this is where I'm going to be. It was a year ago. You're sitting here right now, and many of you, you've lost people. And depending on when you lost them depends on where you are right now. I understand that. Or it may not be that you've lost somebody, but something devastating happened in your life. Or maybe things are not the way you want them. You said, listen, I'm fed up with this situation. It's not going the way that I want it to go. It's not going the way that I think God wants it to go. And I don't understand how I'm supposed to move forward. You keep doing what God wants you to do. And it could take months. It could take years. God called me to preach when I was 14 years old. I was 3 when I came here. Now, to a young person, all right, I'm going to graduate college, get into a church.
It didn't work that way.
All right, I'm going to mourn for 2 or 3 months, maybe a year, and I'm over it. And it's been 20. And it's still right here. You get up, you keep doing what the Lord wants you to do. And when you start to slip and you start to slide, do me a favor. Don't do the old-fashioned thing, the British thing where we pretend like there ain't no problems. Pop a hand up, say, hey, help. Naomi didn't want help, did she? She wanted to go on her own. She didn't want to talk about it. She didn't want Ruth and Orpah there. She wanted, just let me go off to the wilderness. Let me suffer alone. Call me Mara. I'm done. I'm bitter now. See, problems do get remedied. They don't completely dissolve. They don't completely erase. But problems do get solved by doing what God has asked you to do. And if it takes you a while to limp to there, if it takes you a while to where you can walk again, if it takes you a good long while before you're able to sprint, it doesn't matter. Keep doing what you can. You'll get those feet up underneath you. Beyond that, growth begins. Chapter 4. Boaz has this conversation. Forgive me for not reading all through both chapters there, but therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe. Now this is weird, but we're going to have to take a second here. See, this other man, he had the right to buy into the land and marry Ruth and take over the lands of Naomi and have Ruth as a wife, but he didn't want it. Long story short, he would have had to have messed around with his inheritance a little bit in order to have her as a wife and continue the name of her husband. So it was complicated. He said, no thanks. And oh, what excitement must have been Boaz's. Now, they didn't have things like those little tile devices or swiping the card or, here, let me give you a notepad and a receipt. They just whipped off their shoe and that was it. And that was kind of how they signified this was the deal that we've made. I'm so sorry. You sat in the front row. I'll come over here. I promise. If Melody can chew on them, you can smell them. It's fine. No, but that just the symbolism. All right, here's the deal. Now, I don't know. And again, I'll have to look into this. Forgive me for not studying the whole shoe rhetoric into depth. But I don't know if he got the shoe back or if he just got to keep it. If it's possible, you're looking through the shoe collection going, okay, this is when I passed up on that land deal or whatever it was. But they gave up on it. He's like, I couldn't take it. You do it. Verse 11, and all the people that were in the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that has come into thine house like Rachel and Leah, which two did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephrata and be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bare unto Judah of the seed, which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. Now, what you're looking at here is precedence of this situation being explained out and declared out. Verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son, something she did not have from the first union. And the woman said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than 7 sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi. And they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Life goes on. And we never really know what God's plan is in the end. We just know that as long as there is a tomorrow, God's got something in it. We've got to get to it. Now, again, we don't want to fall into the trap of saying, well, what God gave her in the end was better than what they had in the beginning, because that's not nice. And you know what? One love is not better than the other. It doesn't replace it. It doesn't steal from it. It doesn't cheapen it. What it does instead is it enriches the life in the moment that you have. You know what? Things were bad for a while. Now things are getting better. It's not a betrayal that I'm no longer sad. It's not a betrayal that things are moving forward and I'm embracing it. I take the whole package with me. What part is Ruth's story? Chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, or chapter 4? The whole book is Ruth's story. The whole book is David's family story. The whole book is along the lineage of Jesus Christ himself. It all matters. None of it's better than the other. Though there are happy moments and sad moments, all of them needed to take place to get them where God needed them to be. And all of a sudden we see growth. Growth in the family. Sorrow and loneliness is replaced or partnered with joy and children. There are marriages. There are babies. There are relationships. There's restoration. Hey, and Mara has become Naomi again. And now Naomi has something to offer. Now she's grandma. Right? Now she's grandma. And now she's nurse to the baby. And now this name goes on and propitiates on and becomes a mighty lineage. Psalm 27:14. Will you go there with me? Psalm 27:14. Now, if you're of the habit of underlining, highlighting, or just you got a good memory for memorization, this is a good one for you. Psalm 27:14, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. In my Bible study, I've learned that if something is repeated, it's probably because it's necessary. And it's necessary probably because we're the most likely to challenge that thing or forget that thing. And because I see the word wait there, I'm tempted to believe the reason why it's repeated is because we'll challenge it and doubt it. Wait on the Lord. Well, you don't understand. I hurt now. I'm frustrated at a lack of momentum now. Wait. In time and obedience comes peace. Not complete removal of the pain, the thing that happened always happened. But in it comes an acceptance. To where now it's not something that's unbearable, it's something that it's carryable. And then something that's carryable becomes something that we can use as a demonstration to others. I've met some really strong people. A lot of them are in this room right now that have dealt with pain and suffering and loss and frustrations that would take the heart of most of people, right? It's hard. And I kind of liken that to the strength of like some of these bodybuilders that you see. When we were a kid, we had this guy come to our school. He ripped a phone booth in half. Phone book in half. I both aged myself and made a mistake at the same time. Ripped it in half. He brought some of my classmates up there to try it, and we couldn't do it. And what was impossible for us became possible for him. And what he explained to us is that it was impossible for him once upon a time, but after practice and daily effort and strength and obedience to his regimen, he was able to do it. There will come a day when whatever your frustration is, whatever your sorrow is, you'll be able to carry it. There's no guarantees it'll go away. You can't forget what happened, much less than you can forget your name. Can you do that for me? Forget your name. Ready? 3, 2, 1, forget it. Don't be disobedient now. Come on. Participate. Can't do it. But what you can do is you can bear it. And then one of those wonderful things that could ever happen is now that you're better at bearing it and you're strong enough to handle it, all of a sudden you see somebody else struggling to carry theirs. And theirs looks a lot like yours. One of the most devastating days of my life, I had my best friend there with me. And he was talking with me and he was praying with me because he'd gone through the same thing just a couple years before. I was wrecked. And with all my knowledge and with everything I knew, it did me no good because I couldn't see past the despair. And there was my buddy carrying his over his shoulder like this, showing me how to pick it up. It's all right, Matt, this is what you do. And you know what? I longed for that time. I want to be that guy that can just pick it up and show others how to do that. You better believe Naomi sang a different tone going forward. You can already see what Ruth had to say at the end of all these things to Naomi, given her grief. Being able to be strong enough to carry it and use it as an example and a strength to help others come behind you. This is a wonderful story about redemption, yes, and it's a wonderful type of Christ, but let's not forget that these were real people who fought with real sorrows, much the same as yours, who fought with real financial and real estate type problems that you and I could face today and struggled in the same way and didn't understand in the same way we don't understand. And yet all the while, by doing things the way God asked for them to be done, things got better, and oh, the way the story ended. There's so much to learn about serving the Lord and being where you're supposed to be and gathering strength when you don't think you've got it anymore to be learned from Ruth. Aren't you glad that it's not just a rom-com? It's not just a fairy tale story? Aren't you glad that it's not just a parable? It's everything we need it to be, all wrapped up in history. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, as much